Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome one and all to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, another standoff in Washington. This one only lasted a couple of days, but we had tens of thousands of FAA workers being furloughed because, surprise, surprise, the Democratic Senate and the Republican House couldn't agree. Turns out, once again, just like in the debt debate, the Republican House had actually passed a bill to fully fund the FAA. The Senate Democrats didn't want to do that. They thought that Republicans were being draconian on cutting subsidies to rural airports. They also made claims that there were anti-union provisions in there, which the Republicans patiently pointed out were not in there in any way, shape, or form. So ultimately, the Senate Democrats went along with it, although they do give the transportation secretary the power to keep giving money to these rural airports. I'm not really sure how we can do that in the face of a congressional statute. But once again, Republicans did their job, Democrats whined, and Republicans ended up doing pretty much what they wanted to do.
Yeah, I think this is kind of interesting. Jen Rubin is among those saying this is fitting a familiar pattern now for Democrats. She describes it as holler, claim blackmail, and then give in. And what's kind of fascinating about this is that we hear Democrats saying, this is blackmail, this is the worst thing ever, if we give in, the world will blow up. And, we dismiss it because we're used to dismissing 98% of what they say. And the problem is that their base believes it. Their base completely buys into it. And then they watch them making concessions that they had declared absolutely unacceptable 2 days earlier. And probably the most extreme example of this comes from Froma Harrop, who is a columnist who writes somewhere up in New England, a Providence Journal, I believe. She wrote back on August 2nd a piece that said, make no mistake, the Tea Party Republicans have engaged in economic terrorism against the United States, threatening to blow up the economy if they don't get what they want. And like the Al-Qaeda bombers, what they want is delusional, the dream of restoring some fantasy caliphate in which no one pays taxes. So, obviously she goes farther than anybody else in the terrorism analogy. So that in and of itself is outrageous enough. But then look at what she says about Obama. The Republican leadership couldn't control a small group of ignoramuses in its ranks has brought disgrace to their party. But oddly, Obama's passivity made it hard for responsible Republicans to control their destructive children. Now, listen to this sentence very carefully. The GOP extremists would ask Obama for his firstborn, and he'd say, okay. So they think, why not ask for his secondborn? To which he responds, let's talk. Clearly, the result of this article is, vote for Obama 2012. Now, if she really believes this, and I think this is just a tantrum in syndicated column form, why on earth you'd want Obama impeached? You'd want him nowhere near the levers of power if this man is so weak and yielding and passive and incapable of standing up for anything he believes in that he'd give away his firstborn daughter. To the Democrats, each time the Democrats do this, that they overdramatize the stakes, they hyperbolize the terrible consequences that will occur if they don't get their way. And then when they give up, because Democrats deep down realize that they can live with the compromise, they find this FAA compromise is better than letting it go unfunded for the next month or so. Their base is looking at this and they're realizing that they've been sold out, that everything was overhyped, that it was not really the dramatic stakes. And so they turn on their folks. I mean, as much as she's calling Republicans Al-Qaeda terrorists, would you rather be the Al-Qaeda terrorist or would you rather be the man who gives away his own daughter and then is willing to negotiate on the second one? I mean, this is, this is all in a column that's supposed to make Republicans look bad. So I think there is an enormous disconnect between what the Democrats are saying and what they're doing. And I think that when it's that much of a gap, not even their base can swallow it. And you see reactions like this one.
Yeah, a couple of interesting reactions I have to that. First of all, it's fascinating to me how liberals can have absolutely no clue on the fundamental points of the war on terror unless they're actually comparing Republicans to terrorists. And then they seem to...
Weren't you proud to hear a liberal use the word caliphate?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. And there was another one out there today saying, well, if Republicans were willing to crash the economy, you can bet they're willing to crash a few planes out there. So well done. Yeah. Way to keep the hyperbole at a minimum.
On like September 10th, that'll be really tasteless. Then, it's okay.
Which is exactly when I think this is coming back up for refunding. So beware, everyone. Beware. Speaking of the economy, on to the number two martini. Surprise, surprise.
On to the awful martini. The worst martini imagined,
Exactly. Well, in case you didn't pay much attention to Wall Street yesterday, that means you weren't really in much in touch with the world because the market's dropped by more than 500 points. Good to see that we're all in good shape and confident about where the economy's headed after that debt deal. The Dow lost, I guess, about 6% in the wake of this debt deal. And just to compound that, there was a new jobs report out today, which initially helped Wall Street spike into positive territory because there was a tick down to 9.1%, 117,000 net jobs created. It was only until you page through it a little bit more to find out that far more people actually stopped looking for work that kind of takes a little bit of the oxygen out of that. So not exactly a great way to end the week on Thursday and Friday in terms of the great economic news we've been seeing.
Yeah, and it's worth noting regarding yesterday's, you know, horrific market drop, and it's worth noting this is like 9 out of the past 10 days. We in Washington tend to look at it and say, oh, okay, well, it's because of the debt ceiling. It's because of this. It's a bunch of different factors, some well beyond the control or influence of Washington. Europe is a very big factor. Possibility of a global slowdown. All these things are affecting the thinking over on Wall Street. Having said that, it's bad. And certainly the possibility of there's a great deal of trepidation in the economy, in particularly in the investing class. And then the second thing is, just recognize today's job numbers. This is not as horrific a report as it could have been, but that's a long way from saying it is really a good report. Always better to have, you know, 154,000 private sector jobs created. But in light of what we need for population growth, in light of, you know, the number of people who've left the workforce, in light of the number of discouraged workers, that's really nowhere near what you'd like to see for a genuine recovery. So it'll be interesting to see if Obama and the Democrats succumb to the temptation to talk about this as if it really is a fantastic good, you know, sign of good news, or whether they keep their perspective that, you know, I just checked on you know, just for one useful figure, the number of Americans who are not in the labor force has increased by more than 3.5 million people since January 2009. And that's primarily how Obama has driven down the unemployment rate. It's not by getting people jobs, but getting people to give up, quit looking, and no longer be technically unemployed.
Yeah, absolutely right. First of all, I think he's absolutely going to try and take credit for it. I think you can pretty much set your drinking game to phrases like, we're making progress, but we still have a long way to go. Talk about the headwinds of the Japanese earthquake and what's happening in Europe. You know, all sorts of political conflict up on Capitol Hill. And I'm sure he'll make this point on a bus tour that we're paying for several times in the next few days. Got a lot of work ahead of him. I should point out that in that report, we're at the lowest point of adults who are eligible for employment who actually are working since July of 1983, which is obviously horrible since it's been almost 30 years. But I would also point out that things got well enough for the incumbent president back then, and they were already heading in the right direction at that point, that he won 49 out of 50 states. So for those thinking that the silver lining here might be that this puts an extra nail in the Obama political coffin, it certainly doesn't help him. What we really want is to see jobs created, and to say that he's done politically because of what we've seen in the last few months is probably a little bit premature. On to number three now, and for those of you who live in New York or even followed the New York governor's race last year, some of you may have voted for Andrew Cuomo, some of you may have voted for Carl Paladino, but I guarantee you, most of you at least, had a soft spot in your heart for this guy.
Allow me to introduce myself. I represent the rent that's too damn high party. People are working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week and some a third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch, and dinner. My main job is to provide a roof over your head, food on the table, and money in your pocket.
Pretty much sounds like what Obama's doing. But in terms of Jimmy McMillan, he was the nominee for that August party. He is now without a place to live because he was living in a rent-controlled apartment in Manhattan, Jim, for under $900 a month. And now those who are in charge of the apartment can find a higher bidder. So Jimmy McMillan probably be the guy who's willing to pay any sort of rent party for the next go around here. A little bit of irony as he tries to figure out what to do next.
Poor Jimmy McMillan. We know his complaint was accurate. This is a man who was honest with the public of how he saw things. There was no sugarcoating his assessment. Also kind of fascinating, Jimmy McMillan's future plans. A couple months ago, I checked into this and I checked the paperwork and it was true. Greg, did you know that Jimmy McMillan has filed the papers to run for president of the United States as a Republican?
Really?
Yes, he has. So I don't know if he'll be arguing that, you know, it's the Republican rent is too damn high party or how, you know, I think right now the incumbent is running on the stocks are too damn high party. So he'll have a nice contrast with that one. Hoping Jimmy McMillan has a better turn of luck for him and things look better for him, because even if, you know, we wouldn't agree with his policy proposals, he's got a heck of an entertaining way of laying out his views of the world.
I would love to see him at the Iowa Fox News debate. I don't know what it's going to take to get him across that threshold. My guess is he doesn't get there, but it would be fun.
There's a lot of things that are, I'm going to say, too darn high, Greg. There's gas prices, there's mortgage prices, marijuana users. You know, all these things are just too darn high.
Oh, my gosh. Jim, we'll have to leave it there. Have a great weekend.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you soon.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Karumbas of Radio America. I'll be out next week. Brett Winterbull will be in for me, but Jim will be here and join them for the next Three Martini Lunch.